Welcome to this State of Opportunity special report, Better Together, How School Diversity Makes a Difference. I'm Cynthia Canty. Just look at the racial census report of school districts in Michigan. The numbers from the State Department of Education prove districts in Michigan are largely segregated. This hour, we'll look at schools, teachers, and parents working to create, maintain, or even boost diversity in the classroom. Before we dive in, think back to your high school days. Just how diverse was your school?
I grew up in Saginaw, went to Saginaw Douglas MacArthur High School, which is no longer there. It was nicknamed White Haven because it was all white.
I went to high school in India, so they were all Indians. Back home, there's no way I could have had a Mexican teacher, an African classmate, and I think it's a unique experience that I absolutely love.
My high school was in a suburb of Detroit, so I was in the Metro Detroit area. It probably had about 90 to 95% white students, so it was not diverse at all.
My high school was a pretty typical high school. A lot of cliques, you know, you had the jocks, the intellects, the stoners, the smokers. But other than that, pretty normal, pretty diverse. One of the most diverse communities probably in the state of Michigan at the time.
Now more than ever, many feel we need to seek out and embrace the values of other cultures, other groups. First, though, let's look at the origins. How did we get to this point where schools in our state are so segregated? Here to help with that question is Joyce Baugh. She's a professor in the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at Central Michigan University. And she's the author of the book, The Detroit School Busing Case, Milliken v. Bradley, and the Controversy Over Desegregation. Joyce, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Joyce, let's start right at kind of ground zero, if you will. What do you see as the main reasons for school segregation in Michigan?
Residential segregation.
Boy, you didn't take long answering that, did you?
No, I mean, it's where we live, because we have based our public school system on neighborhood schools for so long. Where we live determines where we go to school. Our state, like many other states, we have had very, very serious segregation and housing for many, many, many decades. And, you know, that segregation didn't happen by accident either. We can see it through restrictive covenants and redlining, steering and blockbusting, and where we placed public housing and highway development programs and urban renewal programs and a whole range of things like that. And we can see that in the, you know, in the major metropolitan areas, Detroit, Grand Rapids, Lansing, Saginaw, all of those areas have been affected. You know, it's just that we decided as a country that we would segregate our neighborhoods and that we would maintain them through all kinds of discriminatory policies. You know, whether we're talking about federal and local governments or practices of realtors and banks, this is the system that we created. So that, you know, that's the primary driver, I would say, for school segregation all over the state.
So as this is going on, just becoming more and more baked into the system, we're seeing the economic decline in urban areas.
Exactly. So we go from there, we add in the economic decline. You were asking about Detroit earlier. You go from Detroit being a boom town in the early 1940s, right, through World War II, but then the city begins to suffer economic distress after that. And, you know, most people assume that the city's economic decline began after the racial uprisings in 1967, but that's not accurate. I mean, all of this decline begins shortly after World War II because manufacturing jobs declined tremendously. And then you have the problem of, or for some people it was a good thing, for others it was a problem, of automation, right? Once you begin to use all of the machines to replace workers, you have economic decline. And so you get then the flight of working class and middle class whites who can go to the suburbs using those FHA and VA loans, right, in the 1950s, and you dramatically reduce the tax revenue that is available in the cities for city services, including public education.
And then in 1974 comes this very important decision of Milliken v. Bradley, and that basically set us on this course, didn't it? It sealed the fate of urban schools in Michigan.
Right. Yes, it did.
Tell us about that case.
So Milliken v. Bradley was a case that challenged school segregation in the Detroit public schools. Eventually, a federal judge ordered a desegregation remedy that would involve the city schools in Detroit along with schools in 53 closely drawn suburbs in the Detroit metropolitan area. The case ended up in the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court rejected that remedy. The Supreme Court said that the illegal segregation existed only in the city of Detroit, that the suburban schools could not be part of the remedy. But the problem was that even though the suburban schools had not created specific policies to segregate their schools, they didn't have to because of housing segregation. There were no black students. There were very few, if any, black students to attend their schools.
And so what do you think solutions to school segregation could be? What's working well in other parts of the country?
Well, you know, we've really got this problem of continuing segregation and resegregation in other parts of the country as well. But what seemed to be really effective for many communities, particularly in the South, is that those school districts and those desegregation plans where you had the schools were set up on a countywide basis so that you had different communities in the same school district. For example, the Charlotte Mecklenburg County schools, they were organized on a countywide basis so that when the desegregation plan was put in place, you had students not only in the schools in the city of Charlotte, but at the county schools in Mecklenburg around there. So you could have then that urban-suburban connection.
What about at the state level? What could solutions look like at the state level?
I think the state could begin to figure out, we could think about ways to reorganize the way we've drawn our school districts and try to come up with plans that can pull together, you know, areas that are connected to each other. And the other thing, one of the programs that's been advocated by Gary Orfeel, who's been one of the main experts in school desegregation for a number of years, you know, he talks about creating more magnet schools, particularly in areas that have been gentrified. But that way you can pull in people from urban and rural and suburban areas and get those kids learning together. So, I just think that we have to figure out some way to respond to the original Milliken case by rearranging how our districts and how we think about drawing those school districts and doing it in a collaborative way.
Because we've seen the gerrymandering for school attendance lines, and those are keeping racial divisions baked in, aren't they?
Right, exactly. And if we can have public policies that do the gerrymandering in negative ways, I don't see why we can't figure out some way to pull groups of people together to redraw those lines, to do gerrymandering in a more positive way.
Joyce, if we talk about school segregation in Michigan and don't see changes and don't see things evolve, as you say, you talked about positive gerrymandering, why not? What do you see for our future? What's the takeaway here?
I just think that we are going to continue to have a very segregated state. We're going to have segregated communities. We're going to have schools that continue to underperform because they're not funded well. And, you know, one of the things people have asked me, Cynthia, is I don't think that school desegregation, if we had had cross-district busing or cross-district desegregation, I don't know that that would have made a difference. The way I look at it is I just don't believe that the Detroit public schools would have been allowed to deteriorate the way they did if white parents in suburban schools had been forced to send their children to those same schools. I think that you would have had them pushing for more adequate funding, and perhaps you would have had the state legislatures or the state legislature in Michigan, and I'm saying this sort of broadly, but the state legislature would have been willing, I think, to provide more equitable funding, more resources to all of the schools so that all of the children could be educated well. And I just think our future, I mean, if we're talking about young people as being our future, if we don't educate them, you know, well, I mean, I think that we are not doing our state a service.
Joyce Baugh, professor in the Department of Political Science and Public Administration at Central Michigan University. She's the author of The Detroit School Busing Case, Milliken v. Bradley, and the Controversy Over Desegregation. Thank you so much, Joyce, for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for your interest in this important topic.
One teacher from West Michigan, one teacher from Dearborn, bringing their students together to learn lessons to last a lifetime.
Different cultures don't mean bad, and different cultures should be embraced.
You know, stories have the power to humanize, and when we have the chance to tell our stories to one another as individuals face to face, it's probably the most powerful thing in the world.
This is Better Together, a State of Opportunity special report from Michigan Radio.